Blog Talk Radio.
The Healing Circle is a panel composed of spiritual teacher Kat Edwards and myself, a former social worker. We come together every week for topical discussions in which we share our experience, strength, and hope about everyday life. From depression to connection, we cover all the issues you feel and see as you walk life's sacred journey. Listeners are encouraged to call in and contribute to the show because we all have hard-earned wisdom we need to share. Join us every week at the same day and time. Now, for tonight's show, we're going to be talking about dreams and dream state, and as always, please feel free to participate or just to listen. And just a little bit of housekeeping. We want to make people aware that we do have a Facebook fan page now, and it is, Kat, would you like to tell us what the name of it is? I don't recall offhand.
It's called The Healing Circle with David Clark and Kat Edwards.
Perfect.
Yes.
And looking ahead to next week, we're going to be talking about appreciating friends and family. So please join us then. We do have a caller in the studio. It's Regina, and welcome to you, Regina. I don't have your mic on at present, but we will come to you, and we may have a couple of others joining us. So we're looking forward to the show. And I just will start it off briefly. Kat knows a lot more about dreams than I do, but we all experience dreams, and they are very real simulations that make them feel real. They last from a matter of seconds up to 30 minutes, and of course they occur during our REM period of sleeping, rapid eye movement. And Kat, what would you like to say to start off?
Well, if we go back to in modern history with dreams, we need to go back to Freud and Jung, because they're the people who really started to take some notice of dreams. But in particular in the research and learning that I've had, because I've studied dreams on and off as a necessity and out of interest for my spiritual practice. People will come to me seeking understanding about a dream that they've had. And I can go through and pull out different major topics I see in the dreams, symbology I see in the dreams, and then put together a scenario of what I feel the dream was about. And usually I'm right. And sometimes I wish I wasn't. But you can't really hide from dreams when you start to understand them. So dreams occur for a couple of reasons. The main reason dreams occur is because the conscious mind needs to process something. So they tend to happen during REM, rapid eye movement part of sleep. And when they occur, most often than not, you're just processing your waking life and your daily activities, so you don't really need to worry about those dreams so much. In fact, I think it's a good way of processing your daily life, because, for example, if you had someone who cheeses you off at work, and in the dream you had the confrontation and sorted it out, then you may feel better about the situation when you go to work, or you may be forearmed with do this, don't do that sort of information, because you've been through the whole experience before during a previous dream state. And so you know, oh, I shouldn't say this because that'll trigger them, or I'm better to approach it like that because that's the way it worked out in the dream, and it seems to have been a better fit for how I need to go through things. So it's an excellent way for your brain, your body to assist the personality in experiencing life. We can have lucid dreaming too, which is very interesting. I'm not an expert on dreams. I'd like to say that up front. I'm more of an enthusiast. So anyone who's listening who is an expert, please get on to our Facebook page and tell us your thoughts, because dreams are really, really fascinating. But yeah, so there's different types of dreams that you can have. You can have just your processing dreams. You can have prophetic dreams. You can have really, really vivid dreams. And you can have lucid dreams. And
What's a lucid dream, Kat? I'm sorry to interrupt. Could you explain what a lucid dream is?
Yes. So a lucid dream is when you're consciously aware of dreaming. That's my understanding of it in a nutshell. So you're conscious during the dreaming state, and then you can influence the dream. And so by doing, you can have a better adventure in the dream because you're in control. And so if there's any, like, dark figure in the dream, you know, somebody who agitates you, you do not become the victim of that. You instead become the hero of the dream. And you can also set it up so you have a safe word that will wake you up. Say, for example, bananas or something like that, and that will wake you up. I've gotten to a place within myself that I can now become consciously aware when I'm in a dream that I need to wake up. So I don't always set myself up to lucid dream, but I will become consciously aware in a dream and wake myself up if I have to. And the feeling of getting myself awake is like swimming through different layers of water as I'm coming up through the dimensions and back into my body. Yeah. Have you ever had anything like that, David, where you felt like you being consciously aware during a dream?
Yes, I have. And it's interesting because it's possible to direct the dream when you're in that state of lucid dreaming. And I have been able to do that. The one thing that I found interesting is I was doing a little bit of research on the subject, and this is a little bit of a digression, but it explains to me some of the situations I've had with what people might call bad dreams or nightmares. And I have woken myself up through yelling. And I understand that is one way to discharge a dream or to come out of it. It's been said that anxiety can lead to bad dreams. And I'm aware that given I have had a problem with an anxiety disorder, that it would seem natural that I would go into that place at those points in time when I've been experiencing that. On the other hand, I read that people that lead more peaceful lives tend to have more positive dreams. And Kat, I wondered if you'd be open to me stating some things that I read and then having you reflect on them.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. One of the things that I read about were the importance of dreams being symbolic, and it's stated that each dream processes a feeling, a mood, a memory, or something from the unconscious. What would you say about that?
Yeah, absolutely. If you're going through something in your life, dreaming through it assists you. And sometimes dreams can be quite disturbing, and you can wake up and go, oh my God, you know, I'm going through this situation and then I have this terrible, terrible dream, but actually it's assisting you Nature has a funny way sometimes, and we don't always understand nature's way, but it helps us to, the dreaming will help you to process. And if you really need to sort that, you know, you can go and speak to somebody who understands dreams, who will help you to become a little bit calmer about a dream state that you've been in. Could that answer your question?
Yes, it did. Thank you very much. The other thing that I read that I thought was interesting is that dreams are a way of getting rid of unnecessary information and moving things from short-term memory to long-term memory. What would you say about that, Kat, if anything?
Well, it makes sense, doesn't it?
It does make sense, right. Yeah.
Because we get hit with so much input. Advertising, driving along, you know, you see so many things on the road, in your daily life, just unnecessary input that really does not have any reason for being stored. It's just junk, you know. So it would make sense that you would process that and get rid of it. So part of the whole part of, you know, for dreaming is to remove unnecessary memories, just like you would clear the history on your iPad. And then committing things to long-term memory would mean also that if you, for example, you're a fireman and you've gone and you've done all the theory practice and you pass all the tests and here you are, you're in your first year of being a firey, and you go through some pretty wild different house fire situations, you might not exactly remember every single aspect of that because of adrenaline and being led by the others who are more experienced, but all of that will go into your long-term memory and then be easily accessed when necessary. So you may find yourself going through dreams that are processing type dreams, but you may wake up feeling like, oh my God, what did I just dream? Oh, I can't stop thinking about work. But meanwhile, that's all of that, you know, because someone like that is literally working in life and death all the time for themselves and others. But if you are in a more benign situation, like a mum at home or a school teacher or, you know, you work at the local bank, you've still got to commit certain skill sets to memory. So it makes sense that the dream state would help you do that.
What does it mean when we think or dream of another person? And is it possible that another person may be dreaming of us at the same time?
I have heard of group dreaming, and I've heard it firsthand because I remember when I was a kid, my mother and her friends all found themselves talking to each other about the same dream they all had on the same night, but they're all medical professionals, so, you know, it's taboo to think of things outside of the square when you're in that kind of science field. So I remember they cautiously brought it up with each other. And I don't remember how the conversation started, but I remember my mother with two or three of her friends in my lounge room when I was a kid, all relieved to be telling each other of this dream that they had of each other. So, you know, we are spirit having a physical experience. So there is every possibility that we can meet up and have a spiritual experience as spirit ourselves while our body is in stasis and have a group experience. You know, those women were all working in an intense situation as medical professionals. So it would make sense that they'd have sort of like a psychological bonding, and then they would meet again during sleep state and have another intense situation in a dream together. Would that make sense?
Yes, it did. Thank you. Thank you.
That happened.
Well, you know, on a similar vein, we quite frequently will have dreams about deceased loved ones. What, if any, significance would you place on that? Are they trying to communicate to us through our dreams, or is it just some figment of our imagination?
Look, I think it would be remiss of me to say it's always your deceased loved one visiting you, because remember that we are processing our daily life. So part of the dream may just be dream. It may be your body, your mind, your brain processing the fact that that person, that loved one has gone. And so you've got to always consider that that's a possibility. However, if you have a dream and there's a deceased loved one who's there and they're giving you specific information that then assists you in your life path, that's different to a deceased loved one who just sort of appears and you go through some more grieving and you're dealing with their passing. So you can see the difference between the two types of dreams. So if you're just dealing with their passing, then that's the brain cleaning up those memories and going through the grieving process. Whereas if a deceased loved one appears in your dream and says to you, hey, don't get in the orange sports car, and you're like, what? Don't get in the orange sports car, just say no and walk away. And then the next day you get up and someone from high school says to you, hey, you want to come for a ride in my new orange sports car? I just borrowed it from my dad. And you remember, hey, well, my deceased grandmother told me not to get in that car. Oh, no, mate, not today. And then that guy writes it off. You go, oh, wow, thank you, Grandma. I think definitely there's a place for it, but there, I think, possibly is a distinction between the two types of dreams with deceased people.
Well, one thing that I was reading that seemed interesting was that the deceased convey reassurance and that they often appear to convey that along with love and joy, or that the reassurance can be about that the deceased is okay or the one who's dreaming will be okay. And I thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. But getting to the point or the example that you just gave, it seems to me that there can be some precognitive elements to dreams. Is that what you were saying?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I know I've gone through some weird dreams that had really important symbols in them, and then I've seen it all play out in my life. And for myself, that was when I knew that prophetic dreams were real. So, yeah, there seems to be an element of that. And, you know, that's because when you're going along your life and you have momentum set in a timeline, then certain things are destined to play out because you've created that timeline and there's momentum. And so there's probable events. And you being a timeless being, I mean, look at time at the moment, David. I'm sitting here on Monday morning in Australia and you're sitting there in Sunday night in the USA, yet we speak simultaneously. So, you know, what is time? It's a construct. So the body, the mind, the spirit can move forward in the momentum of the timeline and see possible probable events that can occur. And if those probable events, you need to be consciously warned about them, then you'll get a prophetic dream. So you're consciously warned about it. Or they may, you know, it may be like a warning like, say yes. Don't say no to that. Say yes to that offer. You know, something like that. But, you know, whenever I teach people about doing readings, what prediction is not necessarily being some mystical ability to pull facts out of the air, but rather to follow a timeline of probable events that have a momentum that go with them that then create an energy which brings about certain activities that are going to happen. And so, yeah, that's how I feel it is when we have prophetic dreams. It's just our spirit moving forward on the probable event timeline and seeing probable actions that may occur and then letting us know what to watch out for.
What is it about the fact that sometimes we remember dreams, other times we don't? I know that when I wake up, when I'm having a dream, I'm going to remember it. And as time goes on, it dissipates, and there are just little elements of the dream left, and then it totally disappears for me. And this usually happens with nightmares, because the pleasant dreams, unless I'm having one when I wake up in the morning, I don't tend to remember those. What are some of those things about?
Yeah, so when you're dreaming, you're tending to dream in the REM state, and you're releasing hormones through the cerebral cortex, and the hormone that you release during REM, I think, is norepinephrine. So when that brain region plays a key role in memory and thought, language, and consciousness. So the theory is that the norepinephrine enhances memory in humans, but when you wake up, that hormone is withdrawn, and so you can't remember. You go into sort of a mental fog and you begin to forget the dream. However, what also happens, if there's a particularly intense dream, you'll remember it because we're set up to remember intense things. So you will, and if you think about your lifetime, David, I can pull out dreams that I remember. Some dreams I like to remember. Other dreams I remember because they were prophetic and I go, oh, wow, you know, and then I saw this happen. Some dreams I remember because they affected me so much in childhood. But I do remember dreams that were quite particularly poignant and vivid and real. And that is because I think that norepinephrine was really intensely being secreted at that time, and I also, when I woke up, I reinforced it by remembering the dream when I woke up. So I'm a parent, so when I wake up, I hit the ground running. I don't have time to remember my dreams unless I specifically wake up earlier than my children and write them down. And so that if you get in the habit of writing them down, then there's less of a chance for you to forget them.
Right. You know, on the subject of intense dreaming, I was reading how sleep deprivation tends to lead to more intense dreaming, and that for people that are abusing alcohol or other substances, that tends to repress REM sleep. So when they stop using them, they have unusually vivid and intense dreams. So, and that stress can trigger intense dreams as well as traumatic events. I thought that was all very interesting. Do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah, I haven't learned enough about that to have any kind of educated message about it, other than agreeing with you that when I reflect back on my own life, during times of stress, I did have very intense dreams. But also not always were those dreams bad. Sometimes they were quite pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a reprieve. I remember having a dream one time. I was in like a French chateau, lovely, of course, and there were two men and they were fighting over me. Of course, that was also nice. But the whole dream was in opera. And so here they were in their operatic costuming and they were singing opera to each other, and that was their way of fighting over me. And then we're in this gorgeous French chateau-type castle, and I woke up. I can't remember if I chose one or the other. I just remember what a wonderful, fantastic, cultured dream that was, and I just had the best time. And sometimes I like to go back and think about that dream, just for the fact that it was beautiful music and the men looked wonderful in their costume and the scene, the mise en scène was glorious. You know, it's just a great dream.
That sounds lovely. You know, I think about some of you talked about childhood dreams, and I can remember some repetitive dreams from childhood. And one was very pleasant and refreshing. The other was invoked fear in me. I'll deal first with the fear one. I don't know if it's because of the dreams or having watched The Wizard of Oz and seen a tornado carry a house away, but I've always had a fear of tornadoes, and most likely it has to do with a past life. It's an unreasonable fear as I see it, because we rarely have tornadoes here, and when we do, they're very mild. We might get one every 10 years. And yet I would have these dreams of these sinister tornadoes, and these would occur frequently. And I would go down into the basement, and the house would disintegrate above me, and the tornadoes would seek me out to just whisk me out of that basement. And those were frightening dreams. But I also had many dreams of flying. And that was such a lovely feeling of freedom and provided me with so much joy. And I would have these dreams very frequently. The only thing about the flying dreams that was kind of funny is that I would sometimes be concerned that I'd get caught up in electrical wires.
Yeah.
And, or run into a tree. But usually I was so skilled that I could outmaneuver any obstacles like that. So I remember those dreams. What is it that causes repetitive dreams? And what's the significance of them?
Well, I just want to address the flying dream before we go on to that, and that would be that you were having astral traveling.
Mm.
You were actually astral traveling, and so that's a common experience for astral traveling, is flying.
Mm-hmm.
It's just such a nice experience, isn't it?
Oh,
but repetitive, reoccurring dreams, something's going on in your waking life that you're not facing or that you are powerless to face. I used to have recurring dreams of war when I was a child, and war was going on about me in my home. My parents weren't happy. They were in an unhappy marriage. They were not physically violent people, but they were unhappy in their marriage. And so as a kid, I picked that up, and I would have intensely vivid war dreams, and I'd wake up really, you know, disturbed, because here I was in this war dream, and I get into bed with my mother seeking comfort and hoping the dream would stop because I'd woken up, and then I'd fall back to sleep and it'd pick up exactly where it left off, just like when you press pause and then press play again. It's exactly what happened. So that situation as a child, that was out of my control, but that was my way of coping, dealing with it, I suppose. But it tends to be because there's a situation you're not facing. I remember another one was my first boyfriend who I fell in love with and most likely didn't really love me, but I used to have dreams of him being quite violent. And I had a dream that he shot me one time. I had a lot of dreams of him being a vampire. And I had a dream after we'd broken up that he was a demonic being. And he was never, there was no domestic violence with him. But that was what was going on within him that I was picking up on. And he really broke my heart when we did break up. And so the recurring dream was there warning me for quite a while that I should probably step away from this person. But because I was too young and stupid, I didn't do that. So you need to listen to your recurring dreams because it's your higher self, I think, you know, telling you what you need to do something here.
Sure.
Start listening.
Sure.
Yeah.
That makes absolute sense. I was reading something about the difference between dreams and visions, and I don't recall what it said, but it did refer to how visions can come in dreams, or they can be a part of it. I mean, they can be an experience that we have when we're conscious. And I wondered if you had anything to say about that.
Are you talking about daydreams?
No, I'm talking about like visitations from angels or some kind of I'm losing the thread here. I guess I just wondered if there was anything that you had to say about the difference between visions or dreams, or if visions could occur in dreams.
Okay, well, I can only speak from my own experience with that because I haven't read any scientific studies, and I don't know if there are any on such a thing. But when I have a vision, I absolutely close my eyes and I will deliberately seek a vision because I'm doing a reading for somebody. But I do not seek an outcome from that vision. I only want to know whatever spontaneously crops up because I don't want to consciously influence anything in that vision at all. And if I do, then it's a tainted vision. And sometimes I will come out of a vision and I'll say, look, I want to just be clear. I'm going to tell you the vision, but I am not sure if I have consciously tainted this vision because of the conversation we've just had. And then I'll tell him or her the vision. Because, you know, you need to have a disclaimer there because sometimes that can happen. If the vision is in alignment with the conversation that you've just had. So, you've got to be very careful there. But visions for me look like dreams, but they're very short and they are jam-packed with symbolism because they must give information, deep, true information fast. And so I remember a reading I did years ago and she was shuffling the cards and as I would at that time while someone was shuffling the cards, I'd close my eyes and say, tell me about my client. So let's say her name was Rosie. Tell me about Rosie, tell me about Rosie. And that's all I'd just say to myself, looking into my heart, tell me about Rosie. And then I remember seeing her on a beach in a bikini partying around like a fire. And some people in the background not doing the right thing and the party being dissipated. And so I open my eyes, I tell her about it. She drops the jaw, says, I've just been to Bali. We were just having a beach party and some people got drunk and the police came. I went, oh, wow, well, there you go. So that was probably me psychically picking up on her, but it certainly was a great way of building her confidence with me. When you see, like you see an apparition, you have a full-on spiritual experience. I think that chemically you're having a bit of a DMT release.
What's that?
Now I'm going to have to look up the full name of that. Thanks.
Sorry.
It's called the spirit molecule dimethyltryptamine.
Okay.
It's a hallucinogenic tryptamine drug that occurs naturally in many plants and animals. It's also referred to as the spirit molecule due to the intense psychedelic experience. So often DMT is released during birth. I mean, if you didn't have DMT released during birth, you would remember that incredibly traumatic experience of, you know, being squeezed through the birth canal. It can't be pleasant. I have personally been born so that way, so, and I don't remember it. I must have been off having a DMT trip, thank you. And you will often experience it during death. And people will say, I can see my loved ones. And somebody who works in a palliative care will know that somebody's going to die because they start talking about seeing angels and seeing their deceased loved ones.
Mm.
And the testing that I'm aware of at that time is that DMT is being released by the brain. Now, if I was a straight materialistic atheist, I would just say that they're having a hallucination brought on by their own state, hoping to feel comfort. So they're looking to see deceased loved ones. But I'm not a materialistic atheist. So I would acknowledge what they have to say and the education that backs what they have to say, but I would also say that there are actually deceased loved ones coming forward and that the DMT allows them to see them clearly. If you're somebody who has a naturally psychic brain, so your third eye, which is the pineal and pituitary gland working together, but in particular the pituitary gland working. If that is nice and clear and easily working, then you can see apparitions, you can see energy, and the universe is energy, it's electric. And so you're literally seeing the electric energy of the universe and the different colors and states that it appears. So that would probably be classed by psychiatrists as a hallucination, but if it helps you in your life and you don't tell a psychiatrist, then, you know, good. But, you know, having said that, if you're actually chemically schizophrenic or something, you need to go and talk to one. We'll just have that legal disclaimer in there.
I did read that people that had mental illnesses, such as schizophrenics or depressives, that they tend to have problems with lucid dreaming. But getting back to what you were talking about, that DMT thing, and some of the extrapolation you did on that, I was thinking back to my sister when she was dying. The night before she died, my parents were present, and she told them that her paternal grandfather was standing next to her, and her maternal grandfather was at the end of the bed. And I certainly believe they would have come to her as she was about ready to pass. And that was a very comforting thing for me, and I'm sure very comforting to her. I did find what I was looking for when I talked about visions. And what it said is that visions are something seen in a dream, trance, or religious ecstasy, especially a supernatural appearance that conveys a revelation. And I'm wondering, I don't expect you to comment on that necessarily, but I'm wondering, what is the difference between a vision and an epiphany? I know I'm getting a little off subject here.
nothing an epiphany is, a deep realization, isn't it?
Yes, that's what I understand it to be. And I don't know, it comes so quickly that when I have them, I have no idea where they're coming from, but I embrace them. And, you know, there's sometimes, they're just like little light bulbs that go off in my head,
mm-hmm.
one after another,
mm-hmm.
like popcorn popping. And it's an amazing experience. And sometimes they stick with me, but most of the times I forget what they were, and I wish I wrote them down.
Yeah, so I think epiphanies will come to people in different ways depending on the way that they are wired to think. So I'm a very visual thinker. I think in pictures and moving pictures, and I think in colour, and I dream in colour. So if I'm going to have a revelation, realisation or epiphany, it's generally going to be in a visionary way because that's the way that I think, whereas somebody else may be a more of an auditory thinker. And I would hazard a guess to say that blind people would have epiphanies in auditory manner, in hearing, rather than in a visionary manner, if they were born blind, because that's the way that they experience the world. And a little bit of research I've done about that, because I have found that a bit fascinating, what I've read. And if there is somebody who's born blind who's listening to us, then please correct me if I'm wrong, but they don't, from what I've read, they don't actually have vision dreams where they see things, see images, because they don't have a waking life experience of imagery the way that you and I do as seeing people. But I do also know that blind people have echosensory, is that right? The way that bats do.
I don't
know. Echolocation. Some of them can make noises, and they can have a complete vision of the world through echolocation. So they would actually be seeing the world on an energetic level. So I think that would be fascinating to explore about if blind people do have dreams and how they look for them.
I just read, as you were talking, that a person with total blindness won't be able to see anything, but people with low vision may be able to see only light, colors, and shapes. So I thought that was interesting to read that. I had wondered, because the blind often use their tactile senses to determine what a person may look like. And so I wondered if that could extrapolate into some kind of visual dimension during their dreams. I don't know.
It makes sense that people who have deafness or blindness would still dream, because it's set up for the brain to dream so that they can process their daily life. It's just that they may dream differently than you and I, and maybe they have a more rich experience because they don't dream the way we do. They could have a far more fascinating and rich experience of their inner world than we may have. So, yeah, I think that it would be very interesting to find out how they, you know, there's the scientific journals, and then there's the anecdotal information. And, it would be great to interview some people and say, hey, what's your experience? Can you describe it and actually get an idea of what that inner world is like for them? Because it's, these people are going out and having full and interesting lives anyway.
I would love.
I did.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, I did a funeral service last year for a deaf guy. And I can tell you, he had a more interesting, fuller life than some of the regular hearing people that I know. He had a very exciting life. It would be very cool to hear what these people, how they have their life, their inner state, because it's your inner world. Like sometimes I think, oh, can someone else see me? What does it look like from the outside when I'm asleep having an intense dream? But you're just laying there. It's your inner world. It's your secret. And unless you tell someone else, no one else will know.
Right,
you know, which is suitable if you're having an intense sex dream.
Oh, my. Well, there you go. You're stimulating me again, Kat.
Oh, I agree. You're my gay David in the room. Those who don't know, my partner's called David as well. I'm surrounded by them.
Well, just to let you know, Kat, Regina dropped out and Jackie has never joined us, but Al just joined us.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so we'll come to him in a moment. Actually, we don't have a lot of time left, but I thought maybe he might appreciate it if we talked a little more because he just tuned in recently. And then it will be interesting to hear what he has to say about dreams. And to put you on the spot, Al, his background is in clinical psychology, so it may be interesting to get a perspective from a clinical psychologist with regard to dreams, if you have anything to say on that, Al. So I'll come to you in a moment. One more thing, Al. I would love to have somebody on the show that is blind, since we were just talking about that. And I'm aware of a woman in an organization that we belong to whose name begins with an A, and I trust that you know who she is. I would welcome the opportunity to have her on the show, but I don't feel like I'm in a position to approach her, and if you're willing to do that, that's great, and if not, that's okay too. So with that said, maybe I will come to Al. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
Okay. Hi, Al. You're
Hi.
Live. Hi.
I haven't heard much of the conversation, so it's been it's going to be kind of difficult for me to comment. But I was rather fascinated by what Kat was saying about how someone who's deaf or blind might dream and how that experience might be different for them. I would love to hear anecdotal. Remarks about that sometimes for someone who's deaf or blind. A good friend of mine, his partner is deaf. So, you know, I might have an opportunity sometime in the future to ask him what that's like for him. And I don't know, I used to approach dreams from an interpretive standpoint. And I guess at this point in my life, I kind of do them more like our brains attempt to consolidate memories, kind of pull today together our experiences of the day, maybe pick out what was important in our day. I do kind of still feel like they have a place in interpretation too, because I notice sometimes that the dreams that I do remember have been about, they've picked up on something important that happened to me that day, not necessarily in a literal sense, but I'll have a dream that will hit on some emotional thing that happened to me during the day, and if I can it's helpful, or even something important in my life. So I do still think they have a place for interpretation. But I also feel like they're just also consolidating what important memories that have happened during the day.
Thank you. What would psychology have to say about dreams, Al? Do you have anything that you can contribute along those lines?
You know, they used to take a very Freudian approach to dreams, and or Jungian, you know. But I don't have a lot to say about that. I know when I was younger, I used to do like to try to interpret dreams of my own and other people's a lot more like that. And I don't tend to do that so much anymore. I I tend to look at them more as in a more personal sense now. So no, I don't have one.
What are your dreams like, Al? Anything you can share along those lines? We were talking about, I was talking about dreams from childhood, like flying and tornadoes that were repetitive, and how delightful the flying dreams were. And Kat said that actually was a sign that I was astrally traveling. But what would you like to say about any dreams from childhood or any dreams that you have, and any revelations they might have provided for you?
I did used to have dreams about flying. My dreams about flying is if I did it just, if I moved my arms in just the right way, there was something about, like, if I did things in just the right way, I would take off. And usually there was this element of being in control of it, but sometimes not in control of it. Sometimes there was this, usually I was able to fly, and there was this kind of in-between sense of having some control and not having some control, but not feeling frightened about it, feeling like things were okay. And I think that was part of the excitement about flying too. But occasionally there would be this fear that ran in, well, there was this fear that would occasionally happen in a dream where I wouldn't be able to get down. Or it would happen, I wouldn't be able to fly. It just wasn't happening for me, and really wanting to. So, you know, I'm sure that probably was related to some things that were going on in my life, maybe during that day or recently. There had been something that fell out of control in my life, you know, or the opposite. I didn't have enough power and control in my life, you know, and so in the dream I couldn't get off, I couldn't take off, I couldn't get up into the sky. Maybe I was feeling powerless that day. So I do like flying dreams. I do generally found them enjoyable. I don't find myself hating them so much, although I should say I don't find myself remembering dreams that often. I did have a few weeks recently where I was remembering a lot of dreams. I was waking up and remembering them. As a matter of fact, I think I had texted you, David, with some of those dreams. I can't even remember what they are now. I texted you because I...
Yes, you did. And I'd have to go back and look at the text. But it was very, very interesting dream, Al. It was very rich, as I recall, and that's all I recall. But that answered my question, because I wondered about your dreams, what kind of dreams you remembered. Is there a type of dream that you're more likely to remember?
One that affects me emotionally. I mean, just like memories when you're awake, I think you're more likely to remember something where there's a strong emotional component to it. So a dream that has a strong emotional component to it, you know, either I'm very, very happy in it, or I'm scared in it, or any strong type of emotion, I think I'm, especially if it wakes me up. You know, it's hard to remember dreams that you had earlier in the evening or you didn't wake up from. There's something about waking up from a dream that really helps you remember it. And if it happens, I have to make an effort at the time I wake up to try to remember what happened and reconstruct.
Well, I have a dream that I remember that was extremely vivid. I don't know that it was a lucid dream, except that I did remember it. And in the dream, I threw myself out of a swimming pool because somebody that I know and love was ignoring me. And I was very upset, and I don't know how I flung myself out of the pool, but what I did in my waking reality, or what woke me up, was that I flung myself out of bed and broke a rib. And that was no fun, but I can remember the dream because it had a profound effect on me emotionally and physically. So I just wanted to share that. I'm looking at the time, and we're at the end of the show. And Kat, is it your turn to do the meditation tonight?
Yeah. Can I just say that water always represents emotions in dream interpretation? So you were getting out of a horrible emotional experience, flinging yourself out of the pool.
Interesting. Well, Al, thank you for joining us and participating. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Al.
Thank you, Kat.
I'll turn it over to you, Kat.
Okay, well, let's get comfortable and have a little wriggle. Get yourself all settled. Take a long, slow, deep breath down into your belly and expand it out into your back. And then just release that air nice and slow. Do that again, deep into your belly, expand it out of your back, and then release. And one more time, long and slow, and release. And breathe quietly and comfortably. And with your eyes closed, think about your favorite scene in nature. Think about being in that scene, sitting on the ground or the beach or a park bench, camping, whatever it is that you love about being in nature. Be in the scene. And Mother Earth's going to talk to you. She's going to send you her children, her animals to you, but significant animals. The first significant animal is approaching you now. It's friendly. It's not going to eat you. Think about what it means, what that animal represents. Why would she send you that animal? And as the animal approaches you, put your hand out and let the animal touch you. And instantly, from the animal's heart to your heart, you know what it has to say. Now you say what you have to say back. And let some affection be between you both. And now the animal departs. And the comforting feeling of being held by the earth washes over you. And another animal approaches. Why does that animal come? What is significant about that animal? And again, reach out. And let the animal touch your hand and the message come to you from the animal's heart to your heart. Let there be affection between you. And now it goes. And the third animal now. And as it approaches, you realize the meaning behind this animal,
what it signifies. You receive the message from the animal's heart to yours. There's affection between you, and it departs. Now I'd like you to turn around. And there's a haze on the horizon. And it feels really interesting. And you need to go and walk towards it. And as you're walking towards it, it looks like a heat haze. And you approach it and you feel the warmth of the heat haze. And as you feel that warmth, you come back into your body and come into full awareness of the room. Now touch your shoulder with your right or left hand and tell yourself you'll remember everything that you were told by Mother Earth through her children, the animals, that came to you today. And when you're ready, open your eyes, and at the end of the show, go and write down everything that you were told and keep it as guidance. Thank you.
Thank you, Kat. Thank you, Elle.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Yes. Good night, everybody. Good morning in Australia.
And please join us on Facebook at The Healing Circle with David Clark and Kat Edwards. If you want to discuss dreams further, please start talking about it on our Facebook page. You'll find the post there for today's show. Just comment underneath that.
And join us next week where we're going to be talking about appreciating friends and family. And please feel free to leave a suggestion on the Facebook page or to contact us during the next show to suggest a topic for an upcoming show. We welcome those and would love to do shows based on what the listeners want to hear. So reach out to us and let us know. And with that said, that's the end for tonight and for today.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.